The name of our podcast, Tech Sequences, is really a mashup of two words, technology and consequences. We are fascinated by the consequences, intended or unintended, of the internet and related technologies for the way we live, play, and work. We are your hosts, Leslie Daigle and Alexa Rod. We started our careers at the dawn of the internet and have been friends, colleagues, and comrades in arms for the better part of 20 years. In this podcast, we examine the impact internet-related technologies have made or may make in our lives.
I'm Alexa Rod.
And I'm Leslie Daigle.
Welcome to Tech Sequences. Watches, doorbells, baby monitors, printers, fire and security alarms, fitness trackers, medical sensors, and even some automobiles are all examples of devices who have evolved significantly from even 10 years ago. This new generation of products is known as IoT devices. IoT stands for Internet of Things. The Internet of Things is a web of physical devices that, when powered on, can be connected to the internet and quite often to one another. IoT devices have grown exponentially and are expected to do so for the foreseeable future. As the pandemic forced many of us into our homes, we relied on IoT devices to work remotely, entertain ourselves, and even educate our kids. Consequently, 2020 was a year where, for the first time, there were more IoT device connections than non-IoT active device connections worldwide. The total global installed base of IoT connected devices is projected to be 30.9 billion by 2025. Every industry is impacted by these trends. Yet as manufacturers compete to offer more featureful IoT devices at lower prices, there are two important areas that are not getting the attention they deserve: privacy and security. Some of these devices collect an inordinate amount of data on the consumer and his or her habits, much of which is not disclosed to nor understood by the consumer. In 2017, the New York Times published an article reporting that the humble Roomba vacuum may be doing more than sweeping your house. The high-end models of Roomba, in avoiding crashing into walls or furniture, would collect data that in effect mapped the locations of the walls and furniture of the user's home, one that it could presumably share with the likes of Amazon or Apple or Google. Although iRobot, the manufacturer of Roomba, denied selling the data, they later said they might share mapping data with the consumer's consent, not sell it. But isn't collecting your house layout data a bit beyond the remit of vacuuming your floors? These devices are also notoriously insecure, so much so that in 2019, the FBI urged consumers to keep the IoT devices on a separate network and recommended that consumers change the factory set or default passwords and not allow an IoT device's accompanying mobile app to gain access to too many smartphone permissions. The data collection and the security flaws persist and are multiplied every time a new IoT device is connected. Unless something changes, we are sure to feel the consequences of design shortcomings in both security and privacy of IoT devices in the years to come.
Our guest today is Andrew Lawson. Andrew has been a journalist for more than 15 years, with half that time spent working at Which, the biggest consumer group in Europe. Over the past 8 years, he has used his journalism, product testing, and research work to highlight the risks to consumers from the Internet of Things devices and related connected services that lack privacy and security protections. From smart toys to connected cars to entire hackable homes, Andrew has demonstrated the risks and also put pressure on business and regulators to ensure consumers are better protected in the online world. Welcome, Andrew.
Hello, glad to be here.
So, tell us about the experiment you did with the connected home, the hackable home. What did you find?
Yeah, I think the thing that we often find with hacking risks is they can often feel quite nebulous to the real person. It's like, well, so what? So someone will hack into my account. You know, they can't see the real consequences. So, you know, there's also things like kind of botnets and these big jargonistic terms that we all use. And to most people, it just seems like gobbledygook, really. So what we've tried to do is to connect it much more to real world. So the idea was to take it actually and make a home with a typical number of devices. I think We have an average of 15 now in our homes. You know, everything from TVs to routers to thermostats and all that kind of stuff. And then back then, what we did was actually engaged a team to kind of hack it, you know, so as if you'd been targeted and you know, they were coming in and seeing what could be possible. Obviously, it was a stunt, but it was designed to show that these are theoretical risks in sometimes, but actually they're also very real. And what we're seeing right now is those threats are growing and they're getting much more pressing. People do need to be aware of them, not panic. They need to be aware of them, but also the people who really need to be aware of them are people who are making these devices and the governments who are not doing a great deal to regulate them. So,
yeah, and I mean, there are two issues here, and you know, one of which is the fact that many of these devices are just so hackable that they pose a security risk. And we saw a bit of that in the Mirai botnet attack on Dyn a couple of years ago. That was when it was particularly visible that so many devices not only have no password set, they have no ability to have a password set, and so on and so forth. But the other thing is that many of these devices were also collecting and transmitting data about the user, as you know, Alexa mentioned the Roomba in her opening remarks, and often transmitting the data without users' knowledge. From what you've seen, what was the most surprising or egregious case that you saw for either of those cases?
Well, I think, God, there's so many to mention, to be perfect. I think before I get into examples, it's like, I think the thing that always strikes me is when you make a product, there are standardized ways to do things for, say, putting a plug on, for putting a fuse in, for putting a circuitry and electrics in. There are standard ways to do that, and it's either safe or it's not safe. And so it's very clear, you know, if you sell it without a specific plug and safety features, it's an illegal product and it shouldn't happen. With the connected element of products, it is, I know this is a bit of a slight cliche phrase, but it is a wild west. You know, you can use various different proprietary technologies, maybe a bit of a Linux-based system, chuck a few open source libraries in there, you know, a dash of this, a dash of that, and you've got this kind of Frankenstein's monster of a product, which probably in a lot of cases, not many people in the supply chain even know where half the things come from. They've got no idea how to even update it if there is a problem. They don't know how long those components are going to be available. So you just get this kind of, goodness knows, this mess of a product that comes out.
And part of the problem there is that these devices have to be really cheap. I mean, when you're talking about, yeah, you know, adding electronics, IoT electronics to a light bulb, you can't be putting $10 worth of electronics into, you know, a $5 light bulb.
Yeah, and price is a real big issue, really, because there has been a bit of a race to the bottom. You know, you can get a wireless camera now for £20, you know, and it has the app and it has everything, and it seems, you know, fabulous on the face of it. We know all these things come from the same factories, they're just rebadged and relabeled, and that's how the costs come down, and obviously they're in the manufacturing zones. But now the consumer has gone, I should have to spend £20. So when you say to them, look, you should probably spend a bit more, say £50, £60, it looks like you're kind of foisting a bad choice on them. I think we can meet in the middle, but realistically, manufacturers have to take some responsibility. So, you know, we see so many times where you unpick it and you just see bad choices from basically the design stage, you know, and a lack of joined up thinking, no thinking about how you're going to maintain this product in the long term. So like, where are the components going to be in 5 years time? So what are you going to do with that, consumer? Where does even these open source libraries, who owns them, who runs them, do they ever get updated? So all these things that you would say they probably do know with their electrical components how this all works, there's no real supply chain integrity for the connected element, and it causes real problems. So we've seen, you know, just fully compromisable devices. You know, you can basically take root shell, you can take everything on it, you know, a variety of different risks to the user. Some of them theoretical, but I think we have to sort of not play down theoretical risks, because a theory can be proven in the right circumstances.
As you did.
yes, we did. Yeah, yeah.
I'd actually like to follow that up a little bit, because I know from my own experience that, I mean, I understand that in theory that my router could be being attacked from the outside, my ICP could be being attacked, but it was sort of like, yeah, I should get around to checking on that until the day that I did check on it and saw, you know, hundreds of login attempts to my connected computer. Not just that it was login attempts, but login attempts using usernames that were actually credible for my computer was the part that was really shocking. You know, so you think that I'm nobody. I'm just sitting in the middle of nowhere. Nobody's actually knocking. And then, but the reality is they are, and they are targeting you and they are targeting your devices. And that's what you're finding, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that kind of really worries me is we're now kind of a little bit wary when we're out and out. So if you go out to the coffee shop and log onto the public Wi-Fi, most people know, yeah, I should be a bit careful now because other people can see my connection. When you get home, you lock the door and you go in and your guard goes completely down. So your security behavior probably is pretty limited. You probably don't really do the things you should be doing. And there's also this assumption that this mighty router with its powerful security will protect you from everything. And that's not just an assumption on the public. That's an assumption that manufacturers make. So the one thing we get is like, oh, you found a local based attack. You'd have to be on the network. So it's not really much of an issue. And my pushback is like, well, have you looked at most routers before? You know, because in my experience, they're universally terrible and it can be trivially compromised in many cases, unfortunately.
You mentioned that some of these devices are now £25 in the US. I mean, I was just looking yesterday, found a camera for less than $10. And then if you had a coupon, it was even less. So we're living in a disposable consumer culture. And, you know, you said there's no incentive to upkeep these devices. I think part of it is also the fact that these are so disposable. I mean, if I can get a camera for $5, why am I going to be worried about getting the device updated and the firmware updated? I won't even be thinking about that. Is that part of the problem that it is so disposable?
Yeah, and there is a little bit as well. Security is often a bit like insurance. Like, you don't know you need it until you need it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like it just hums along in the background. It does its thing. And most of the time people won't even notice until they get a compromise. The extension of that also is a lot of people don't even know they've been compromised when it happens. So we do a lot of work in fraud and scams, unfortunately. And a lot of the time we're trying to piece together, where has this person's information been compromised? And mm-hmm. you very rarely can do it with Infinitive, but you're pretty sure someone's got in their email, got in some device somewhere, yep. got in some folder, and they've used that for a phishing attempt or something like that. So it's interesting because manufacturers will come back and go, well, consumers aren't coming to us and saying, give me all this security and all this kind of stuff all the time. And I'm like, well, A, they don't know they need it.
Right.
And B, they don't necessarily connect the dots. So it's a vicious circle. The manufacturer's saying, we'll wait for the consumers to say they want it, but the consumers will never know they need it. And so a lot of the work we do is trying to stimulate them to kind of think about it, you know.
A lot of the data that's actually used for security bits of these are things like your email, your cell phone, your name, your address. These are information that is so easily gained anyway. Some of it is so public. It's not going to be that hard for a hacker. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. You know, and like, we do have a gold mine of information with smart devices. You talked earlier about these privacy concerns, which are concerns as well, but equally they're concerns from a security perspective, because if it's absorbing a lot of information and it's transferring it in an unsecure way, it's giving away a lot of data. So for example, I did a test back in 2015, I think it was, and we just ran some Wireshark analysis on some thermostats. I mean, nothing too hectic, you know, just did some PCAP, and there, right in plain sight, was someone's weekly schedule, unencrypted.
Wow.
I'm in here, I'm out there, you know, and times and everything. So it's like, I mean, we called it a burglar's dream at the time, which the manufacturer didn't appreciate. But
depending on who they were, maybe an assassin's dream, you know, dream, right?
Either way, it's, well, um, it's a,
Yeah. I mean, and that's the problem. I mean, I've seen that settings in our smart thermostats, you know, away mode. Like, no, I don't think I'm going to set an away mode. I mean, our actual official first IoT device in this house was our IoT cat feeder, which is, you know, a lovely thing, little camera on it so you can watch your pets. And we got it because we were going to be away for a weekend. And of course, it comes in the door. And the first thing is you set it up to talk to a remote service. And I thought, right, now I'm just broadcasting that we're away. So that feeder doesn't come on only when we're away. It's on all the time. Thank you very much for the very reason that it's like, I don't need to have signals broadcasting. Oh, they're away this weekend.
It is quite amazing, the chatter of noise that's going on with devices. I ran some packet capture on a smart TV for 15 minutes. And in that time, we spotted 700 active URLs in 15 minutes.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's just constant. People don't realize the level of noise these things are doing. And some are noisier than others, granted, but a noisy appliance is chattering all the time,
Yeah, so I was going to say that we had touched on, you know, the poor security inherent in these devices and the fact that they are sort of privacy exposing. But a third piece is, you know, that's the here and now. And the third piece is then you give away or sell or throw out your device, right? And there are further consequences for all the data that's on the device has now been handed down to somebody else, right? I mean, there was a story recently about your IoT light bulbs thrown out, maybe giving away your Wi-Fi password. What kind of things have you seen there? What kind of ramifications?
Oh yeah, we do actually test for what we call decommissioning. So basically, like we decommission the product and then we try and reapply for we reset it up and see if there's any trace data on it. But this is an absolute real problem. I mean, there's been like cameras sold that have been used in NHS hospitals and they've found NHS Wi-Fi hospitals passwords on them. The biggest one though is, and typically is, cars. So we did a load of research a while ago showing that people just never wipe the data from the car when they sell it. And it's got GPS data in there, phone contacts, you know, all a wealth of information.
Not even sell it, rent it. I mean, you're renting a car for just a few days and you're connecting it to your smartphone to play your music and whatnot. And I bet you, you know, so many people, probably more than half the people, don't even think about wiping that data before giving back the car.
Yeah, and often it's quite complicated. They don't make it easy. And obviously the used car market is, and the car rental market is so rich, where used IoT devices do get sold on, but yeah, if it's a £20 camera, probably someone will just throw it in the bin. There's a lot of trace data on there. We've seen devices where we tested a smartwatch some while ago, and the only way you could actually reset it was by sending it off to the factory to be, I don't even know what they did. I assume they just chucked it in the bin and sent you another one probably. But it's ridiculous.
Ball peen hammer. About
it. Yeah, just smashed it and said, there we go, job done. And it's just stupid designs, just not fit for purpose. Which is real, the crux of a lot of the issues, really.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about permissions, right? For example, you know, this Roomba that was collecting all of this data. In some cases, they actually, that the smart device asks you for permissions and people just, you know, automatically
it's
just say
screen.
Yes.
It's another screen. It's just like, oh, get this screen.
Oh, yes, whatever, sure. Gone. I agree. Let me get to the bottom. But tell us about what you found with these permission settings. I mentioned the FBI has actually had an advisory telling people, you know, please pay attention to what you're giving permission to these smart apps. Do they really need to know all your contacts? What have you found?
Yeah, I think permissions is an interesting one, really. We see a lot of what I suppose you could be called rainy day permissions. So just in case type of things. And they'll give you some kind of justification of like, oh, we need it for this combination of functionality or whatever. I think Apple and Google are now starting to get a little bit tougher with that, but I mean, you know, I think poachers and gamekeepers comes to line there, really. Without wishing to sound anything too libelous, actually it's slander if I say it, isn't it? So
that's right. we believe
yeah. But you know, it's very interesting. I think there's probably a mix here of slightly egregious desire to kind of gain access to things. But I think a lot of what it is just really quite sloppy programming, really. It's just someone's gone, oh, we better just do that because otherwise we can't make it work. And then you take it to the companies, they go, oh, we didn't actually even realize we asked for that, so we'll stop doing it.
That's interesting. It's like most of the evil stuff that's done is not because there's some, you know, mad evil genius. It's just, like you said, you know, it's stupidity.
And I think part of the problem with the permissions was that in the context of an app, it's always easier to use fewer permissions than you've asked for, and for later revisions to use. If you, it's harder to introduce new permissions in a later version. So you want to ask for everything at the outset and figure out what you actually need. But, you know, that may be the reason why the ask is overgenerous to begin with, but that doesn't stop, you know, either the software developer or some malicious entity from taking advantage of it along the way. So it kind of isn't the solution. So maybe we should ask, you mentioned talking with manufacturers about, you know, improving their stance and so on and so forth. How has that gone?
We have a varying degree of relationship with manufacturers. It can sometimes be very testy and legal and not particularly pleasant. And it sometimes can be really, really good. And actually, we are starting to see a much more positive engagement. You know, it tends to be if we get in touch with them, they panic because obviously it's probably not going to be anything good. It's not going to be us saying you've done a cracking job on this. And, you know, if I'm ringing you, it's not, I'll put a pat on the back. You know, we do tend to have a good kind of constructive. I do tend to think that they are working some of this stuff out themselves as well. You know, there are grey areas here. You're absolutely right, Leslie, that actually sometimes there are structural and technical issues that they've had to kind of overcome. And I am kind of conscious of that. But there comes a point where you do actually have to say, you know, is it required? You know, is it necessary to have, say, fine location over coarse location? Like, do you really need fine location? And I think we're coming to the point now where whether the consumer is wanting it or demanding it or not, it's really a matter of what's right and wrong. And I think that's where we need to get to, like, what is right and wrong? And just to kind of finish off, I'm not sure that should really be decided by tech companies, to be perfectly honest. I think it really should be decided by, you know, independent groups, not saying us necessarily, but independent groups who can give a kind of independent view of what is the ethics here? You know, what should someone be expecting from these gatekeepers? And what is not right, you know?
And part of the challenge there in doing that well, of course, is to do it in a way that is global, because I mean, I agree, it's more likely the independent groups that should be framing up what good looks like. But if we, you know, if every individual country comes up with their own rules and regulations on IoT manufacturers and software developers, then we're just going to have a mishmash of things that it's going to be even worse. You talked earlier of having plugs that you can plug into the wall. It's like, even worse than trying to take a North American appliance and trying to plug it into the wall in the UK, we're going to have IoT devices, which fundamentally could function globally, unable to do that. So global standards, they're hard.
They really are, and I think it's taken a long time to get an IoT standard together of any note because of that. I think that the Etsy standard is pretty good. I think it does a good job, let's put it that way, you know. And I think we do need to have some kind of standardization now, because as you rightly say, there's loads of competing, this alliance and this committee and this regulatory and this, that, the other, and suddenly you're like, everybody's singing on different hymn sheets, so to speak, so which never is a good situation for any kind of positive change, you know.
So the UK government initiated a new Secure by Design initiative. It lays out a voluntary code of practice for manufacturers for connected products. In a way, you could say that these are what consumers should be asking for from the manufacturers anyway when they're purchasing a product. But can you talk about what they are and what do you think the impact of these Secure by Design initiative will be?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, obviously I'm independent of the government, so I'm not going to praise them too much, but I think they have taken a good stance. I think this is probably going to be the first real notable legal action. I think there is something going on in California, correct me if I'm wrong, and a few other governments are looking at different things. So Singapore's kind of mandated some labeling and things like that, and I think Australia's looking at some stuff. But I think this will be the first bit of kind of real proper primary legislation which says, right, we need to treat the cyber risk of products as much as we do the electrical safety risk of products. And I think, you know, there's always going to be pluses and minuses to anything like this, because legislation is hard. It's like there's so many different variables. It will provide, I think, a good baseline. So basically, you know, there'll be a line that they can build on, and there'll probably be secondary legislation and things going through. But, you know, we need something. We can't just keep going on with this, let the market sort it out, because the market has had many, many years and got in not even close. It will also allow us to take more action. So when we go to certain e-commerce platforms or certain manufacturers who are, say, less engaged in doing something, we can actually have a bit of a stick to kind of go after them with, whereas now it's more like we say it, but they don't have to by law. So if you don't care, you don't care, you know.
So we've talked about what you can do now with your devices. We've talked about what we hope from governments in terms of you know, identifying what is mandating, what is required in order to be a well-behaved consumer device. But what about going after the bad actors? Is that viable at all? I mean,
yeah, definitely. I mean, like, you know, we've had products taken down from retail chains, listings removed, you know, all this kind of stuff. Obviously, we put out press stories all the time with kind of naming products, and we have the ability and the independence that we can name brands, and we can go after companies, and we can go after people and say, these, you shouldn't buy this, or you shouldn't think, consider this, and actually this company's not doing it right. So we can do all that kind of stuff. I would say, It has an impact, obviously, but it doesn't change the game. Mm. It doesn't change the fundamental rules and by which these people are operating within. And that's why you do need to have some kind of strong regulatory regime or something. Otherwise, it fundamentally doesn't stop the people who don't care from kind of getting away with it, you know.
Yeah, I was thinking also in terms of, you know, there are bad actors who are actually, you know, either abusing the data that they receive or stealing data and or engaging in malicious activity towards your devices, and we've not really talked about the possibility of identifying who those are. Who were those entities that were banging on my internet front door and trying to log into my machine? What can we do to try to find them and stop them, or is that just, you know, just impossible? Yeah. And we should just give it up.
I don't think it's impossible, but I think we have to be honest about the challenge. You know, most of the times these people are very elusive. You know, they cover their tracks well, they know what they're doing. You know, there will probably be a few caught, you know, like there's been quite a few notable corporate attacks and notable where, you know, they have got back to them eventually. I think what more concerns me is that, you know, at the sort of start of the internet, when, you know, email providers and search engines were all coming through, and we were all like, this and all this kind of stuff. And at the time, people sort of thought, oh, this could be manipulated. But then everybody just piled in.
Yeah.
it was no real sort of consideration at that time for, oh, let's try and build some good practice in, some hygiene in now.
Yeah.
So it feels like we have that with hardware now, where, you know, we're starting to see what could be possible. Sooner or later, all the consumers are going to pile in. So markets are going to become completely smart. That's what you're going to buy. And we're just going to walk into the same dark alley and make the same mistakes all over again. So I think it's not about not caring about catching the bad guys, but it's more about educating people of all layers of society. You know, we've got to get this done now, because it's a tipping point.
Window of opportunity, almost. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
great.
And that's what a lot of our work has been trying to do, is just sort of raise the alarm, get people thinking, and get action now before it's too late. Because with phishing, it really is, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, this is why, you know, Leslie and I started this
podcast was to think now about the consequences of decisions that we may be making both advertently or inadvertently, because later down the line, it might be that much harder to try to clean up. So let me ask you, from everything you've seen, you've obviously tested even, you know, expensive devices like an automobile to a very cheap, almost throwaway device like a small camera. Is there any kind of correlation between how expensive or how complex a device is and how secure it might be and how well designed it might be? Or is that just not any correlation you found?
Yeah, I mean, actually, a lot of time with price, because they're marketing for features. So features is what people like, you know, like I get this added value with the product, you know, I get this premium feel and build. So actually, but with security, they don't seem to reach a premium level. So you don't get like kind of, you know, you might not necessarily get some kind of like luxury set of security features with it. It's just cost more because it's a certain color or a certain fit or vibe. So actually, it doesn't necessarily really matter. I mean, like, it does vary by brand, but we've seen little tiny cheap products which are really quite well made. You know, they've done all the things that you would expect, and we've seen big products where they've just made a complete mess of it. And I think it comes down to also, and this is a theme we see a lot, is when you've got traditional industries. So say like I'm fridge manufacturer A, and I've been making fridges since like the 30s or something. I don't know. I can't remember. I don't actually know when fridges started. But anyway, you know,
they were called ice boxes.
Ice boxes, yeah. Since the days of the icebox gramophone, and you know, basically, like, that there are traditional instances. Someone internally has gone, oh, we need a smart model because manufacturer B's got one and it's selling really well. So if someone goes away, gets given to probably someone who's worked in IT or likes gaming or something, says, right, okay, you go and find a load of bits and stick them in and then we'll make them work. And of course, it's not joined up. It's not from the design. It's a kind of let's get it to market type thing. And you see that all the time, this kind of mashing together of the traditional, you might call them the analog side of products with the digital side. And, you know, they just sometimes just jar up against each other. And I know that from personal experience, from running a lot of test labs of varying degrees of experience and trying to get them to think about IoT. And for some, it's like, wow, what? Where do I start with this? This is like stuff. And that's not a front on them. It's just the reality when it's not your world, and yet you're trying to
paradigm shift.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, this has been a fascinating exploration of the world of our smart homes. And thank you very much for sort of taking us through all the angles of it. And just before we go, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think first of all, don't panic. You know, there's still the chances of you getting successfully hacked are still relatively low. You know, you think about when you use your computer, as long as you keep your system updated and you don't sort of make any silly choices, you probably won't get malware. You probably won't get a virus, but it can happen. So it's worth just considering it as part of it. So don't just turn something off and forget about it. Have a look in the settings, see if there's any security, like two-factor authentication or a PIN code or something you can put on that's not too egregious. Use password managers for your passwords. Don't set bad ones.
Don't use the same password everywhere.
Definitely don't do that. Don't use your pet's name or anything like that. Anything that can be easily phished. Be wary of email, anything in your email that looks a bit dodgy. And also, you know, if you're not using something that's connected to the internet and you're not using it for a while, turn it off. Just turn it off. You take it offline. You know, then it's not a risk, is it, anymore? And turn it on when you're ready to use it. You know, some of the old instincts about, you know, don't walk down dark alleys, don't talk to any strangers. These are all true.
Stranger,
you know,
danger. Yeah.
Just think about what you're doing. Don't panic, but think about what you're doing. Internet devices, and you can use them safely.
Smart advice.
Great. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure having you. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this TechSequences podcast. We are Leslie Daigle and Alexa Rod. You can reach us by email, techsequences@techsequences.org. We'd love to hear from you to know what you thought about this episode or ideas for future episodes. TechSequences, follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and subscribe through your favorite podcasting service.